ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central.
Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go.
This is Sports Central.
Go. Happy Wednesday. This is...
And streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Stepped on the intro there. Thank you, Chris Duffy. I'm Kevin Powell, in for Adam Hogue, who remains out for a few more days. I'm here through Monday, and we're on until 2 o'clock. No more beating around the bush. Very excited to introduce our first guest of the day, White Sox General Manager Rick Hahn. Rick, appreciate you jumping on today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So if you could quickly provide another scare yesterday. Jose Abreu leaves the game with a tight hamstring. Kevin Smith goes down. Any updates with both of those guys before we move forward?
Yeah, those are we've sort of paid our contributions to the baseball gods this far in spring with Jake Berger's Achilles tendon and Mike Rodolfo's ulnar collateral ligament. So I was not expecting to have to continue to answer questions like this. But fortunately, both the Abreu injury and the Smith injury seem relatively minor. Jose, to his credit, sort of pulled up before he felt any sort of pop or created any significant damage to the hamstring. It really is just tightness that has him day to day. Regular season, there's a chance he's in there today, but probably would be in there tomorrow. Since it's spring training, we're probably going to take a couple extra days before getting him back out there before the Cactus League season ends here. But he should be fine. And Smitty, I think he did hear a loud pop when he turned the bag, which is always scary, and he was having trouble putting weight on it initially, immediately after the injury. But it seems like he, too, has avoided significant injury and just has a little relatively mild ankle sprain. He was walking around the training room late in the day yesterday, which is as someone who's rolled his fair share of ankles, he obviously has a higher pain tolerance than I do and is recovering far more quickly than I ever did. So good news on both those guys.
Good to hear. The injury is obviously the negative part of the spring so far, but a lot of good things happening as well. How would you grade this spring overall for you guys when you do factor in the injuries, but you factor in the positives, like the relationships being built and guys working on their craft? If you had to grade this spring, what would you give it?
No, yeah, I would say it's been a very good spring. We were really pleased with how the young players who've gotten an opportunity have acclimated themselves at the big league level. Obviously, Eloy and Luis didn't get quite as much run in big league games as you would have hoped because of their setbacks. However, I think in the short time that they were able to perform, you saw a lot of things to be excited about. Dylan Cease had a marvelous spring and looks to, knock on wood, put any injury issues that he's had in his past behind him and is poised to what appears to be to have a very fine year ahead of him. Michael Kopech obviously threw the ball well. Dane Dunning, a lot of guys who were getting their first exposure to Ricky and the staff really made good impressions. And you touched on something from a cultural perspective that's very important to us, and that's the tone of what Ricky and the coaches said at the big league level and having our players understand that throughout our minor league system. And a lot of sort of the bonding or the cultural side of things that we put in place during the course of spring training does have a carryover effect as these kids go back to their affiliates, and we think we'll serve everybody well over the course of this summer and certainly into the future.
Well, just being in the clubhouse a little bit this spring, you can really sense the genuine excitement. It's a fun clubhouse. Guys are laughing. Guys are hanging out. Guys are playing cards. They're doing whatever. It seems to all have happened organically.
Very much so, and you have a lot of guys who are coming up together, who have obviously read the press clippings and knows what the expectations of them and this organization are going forward, and they're very much embracing it, and they see the talent that's around them, they see the talent that's coming, and as a unit, they're with pride embracing the notion of being sort of that next Sox group, that young core that ideally is going to coalesce together and put ourselves in a position to win championships here over the next several years. There's still a ways to go, obviously, and obviously they're not all at the big league level just yet, or likely not even over the course of the 18 season, but the the work that's being done both in big league camp and then once they arrive in minor league camp and then throughout the summer at their affiliates, those bonds we suspect are only going to get stronger and is going to, again, serve the organization well once we're in a position to win.
Well, I want to ask you, Rick, I don't think you've been asked this question once, not one single time this entire spring, Rick, and that's when will Michael Kopech and Eloy Jimenez be called up to the big league club?
You know, it's funny. Obviously, that's we've replaced the questions from last spring about Yoan Moncada and Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito with Eloy Jimenez and Kopech. And frankly, I hope a year from right now you're asking me the same questions about Luis Robert and Alec Hansen or Dylan Cease or any of a number of the young guys who are in that next wave. And it was important to us to as we built this thing, to make sure that we had, in for lack of a better description, sort of wave upon wave of talent coming to us that was going to continue to grow this core over the course of the next several years. As for as was the case with Moncada and Lopez and Giolito, and will be the case with Kopech and Eloy, and will be the case for each of the next generations after them, they're going to come to Chicago after they've answered all the questions we've had for them at the minor league level. There is very much an element of development that happens in Chicago that can only happen at the big league level, given the unique speed of the game at the major league level. However, there is still some things that each of those players have to round out at the minor league level. Eloy is only 20. He's spent about 3 weeks above A ball. And while we suspect he is going to, ideally, when he picks up where he left off in Birmingham at the end of last season and makes a very large ballpark look small, and then ultimately, you know, has the other challenges of potentially AAA ahead of him, we suspect he's going to force the issue on us given the talent in terms of when his promotion comes. Kopech, you know, he's 21 years old. His career high in innings is about 135 or so, which he set last year. And by his own admission, and I think for all of us who have worked with him, we see, you know, he needs a little bit more work on the changeup, which he's going to need at the big league level. And as he's talked about, you know, some of the composure things that got to him this spring need to be refined. But both of those two are really good, and the really good ones have a way of sort of forcing the issue on you. And we suspect over the course of this summer, each of those two players will do that to us. Well, we call that a good problem to have around here.
You mentioned the composure and the changeup to Kopech. Was that your main message to him as he was reassigned to minor league camp? Is that kind of what you relayed to him? Those are the two things you want him specifically working on?
Absolutely. And we had a real good talk with Michael yesterday or the day before, whichever day it was when we sent him out. And a lot of the times in those meetings, you know, especially in spring training, they're not surprises. Michael knew from the start that our expectation was that he was going to begin the year in Charlotte, and there were certain things that we were hoping he'd get out of big league camp. So when you have those meetings, especially with a guy who's expecting to be sent out, you really let them sort of guide the conversation about what they feel they got out of camp and what expectations they have and what they feel they need to work on themselves over the course of the summer. And Michael was the one who led with being happy with the progress his changeup has made in a short period of time, which we agreed with, but also feeling like it's going to be an important pitch for him going forward, and he wants to continue to stay on it. And then Michael himself was the one who raised the composure issues he had a few times, and we talked about sort of what was behind that, and really, not shockingly, given his makeup, it was about, you know, the very high level of expectation he has for himself pitch to pitch, and when he's not executing a specific pitch, he gets frustrated. Again, with time and repetition, and age, that's all going to iron itself out, and is that level of competitiveness, when properly reined in, is really going to serve him well.
Of course, you have the general manager's perspective, but back to Eloy for a second. Fans and his teammates seem in awe of what he can do. A real special player. What was your takeaway from seeing him in a full camp with you guys?
As advertised, you know, we obviously had been a fan of his going back to when he was an amateur back in, I believe, 2013 was the year that he originally signed with the Cubs, and our pro scouts have thought very highly of him leading up to our acquisition of him last summer. And then once we had him in our system, our player development folks in both Winston-Salem and Birmingham – spoke extremely high of not just the obvious tools that are apparent to the naked eye, but the way he fits into a clubhouse, the how high energy and gregarious he is, as well as his work ethic and his responsiveness to instruction. And all that was as advertised over the course of the month or so that we had him in big league camp here. He's obviously an extremely talented individual. Everyone knows that. And once you get to spend a little bit of time with him on a regular basis, you realize that he's a pretty special guy off the field as well, which is just tremendous. And obviously the type of individual we want to have representing this club.
One of the guys I had a chance to talk to a couple times out when I was out there in the desert, also had him on this show, Lucas Giolito. Just a really, how would I describe it? He's very dialed in. He's very, like, connected to his game, his craft. You got to be pretty happy with what you've seen from him so far, the big league level and this spring.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a very mature kid. People forget the fact that when you spend a little time with him, that he's only 23, that he was a high school draftee, and a high school draftee who needed Tommy John at the time of his selection by the Nationals, and therefore, you know, missed some development time early in his career. From the start, when we first acquired Lucas, you could tell that he understood his mechanics very well, that he was a very realistic self-evaluator about where he was and what he needed to do to get better. The pure stuff and ability was always there, and it was really a matter of fine-tuning the mechanics so to enhance his ability to repeat the delivery and allowing the natural talent to take over. And look, he, again, 23 years old, hasn't spent a full year at the big leagues, with each of our young guys, there's still going to be some growing pains that happen at the big league level, whether it's Lucas or Ronaldo or Moncada, even Tim Anderson. These are still very young players who are going to have fits and starts. But as they mature and they understand better what are their keys to success, and they're able to almost self-correct on the fly, which I think is really what you're seeing from Lucas these days, that is a skill that's really going to help minimize these slumps going forward and help them get back to producing at the high level they're capable of producing at.
Carson Falmer's had some command issues this spring, had some struggles, had a nice bounce back start earlier in the week, though. Would you fully expect him to be on the big league rotation on opening day?
You know, we haven't made that announcement just yet. We haven't had those specific conversations with what guys are going to be winding up in Chicago and which are going to be starting the year in Charlotte. But I will tell you that when you make an assessment on a guy like Carson, it's not just, you know, three or four starts in March. It's more about the body of work. It's more about his history, what he was able to do last year at the big league level and at the minor league level. And the specific work elements that we wanted him to work on while here in Glendale. Sometimes that creates more problems. For example, going back to Kopech's changeup, if he gives up a home run on a changeup, that's not necessarily a failure because we need him throwing that pitch. That's more of a teaching opportunity than something that dictates his ability going forward. It actually, you know, some of those setbacks serve him well. And in Carson's case, I think coming in here knowing that he had a real good shot of being in the rotation, he may well have put a little additional pressure on himself to sort of seize that, or at the very least, once things didn't start out great, you know, that felt some of that pressure and that impact his performance. So it was real good to see him the other day against Arizona, against a good Arizona lineup at their place on Monday, have a solid start, keep his mechanics in check, sort of slow things down, and to be able to throw some quality strikes that we know he's capable of doing. So, again, young kids are going to have some fits and starts. We have the opportunity ahead of us here in this season to really learn about a lot of our young guys and give them the opportunity to succeed and show they belong as part of a core of a next White Sox championship club. So we're going to err on the side of giving these kids those opportunities, because that's at the end of this year, it's going to be real important for us to understand which of our players fit into what we're trying to do going forward and how.
All right, before I let you go, can we do a little rapid fire where I throw a few names at you? You give me a quick scouting report and update on their spring and tell us where they'll start the year?
I can tell you everything perhaps where they're going to start the year. Again, I prefer the players to know first.
Okay.
But in general, I can tell you.
How about Dane Dunning? How's his spring?
Great spring. You know, Dane's calling card is that sinker. And, you know, we actually used him out of the pen a few times, which is not how he's going to be used going forward. It's with how he was used in college. But we view him as a real valuable pitching prospect going forward, a guy who's going to be able to give us innings and keep the ball on the ground. He finished the year in Winston-Salem last year. There's a decent shot he begins the year there again this year, just to get a nice start for the first, say, four, five, six starts of the season. And then ultimately, I suspect he'll suspend either the start of the year or after promotion, will spend the bulk of his season at Double A Birmingham.
Alec Hansen.
He had a little bit of a setback early in camp with some forearm soreness. Thank goodness, as I said, we already paid our tributes to the baseball gods through the other injuries, and the MRI came back essentially pristine, or as good as you could possibly hope for on a pitcher. He is just dealing with that muscle soreness, getting that out, and starting to ramp back up now. So once he's ready to go, he'll be part of that Double-A rotation, and obviously he's having led the league, all of minor leagues in strikeouts last year, and given his physical tools, he's one of the finer pitching prospects in baseball, and we look forward to having him out there in Birmingham before long.
How about Zach Collins?
You know, here's the thing about Zach for me, and I get a little defensive on Zach because I think due to the low batting average or the lowish batting average last year, there's this misperception that this kid had a bad year. Not only did I think he walk over 80 times and hit something like 17 home runs and had an OPS over 810 or 830 or something like that, all of which is really, really good for a catcher. Last year was his first full year as a pro. He played more games last year in 2017 than his entire college career combined, and he's doing it behind the plate, which obviously is the most rigorous position. And at the time as he left camp last year, it's really sort of the catching and throwing and the pitch calling that we're looking for the development from him over the course of the 17 season. He's going to hit. Everyone's always known Zach Collins is going to hit. The elements that needed to solidify were his defensive elements as a catcher. So he had a lot on his plate as a full-time catcher last year, and he still produced at an offensive level that I think is pretty darn good, despite people taking cracks at his batting average. I think Zach's going to be just fine. But you hit a nerve there about Zach, so I had to unload,
fine.
Even though all you did was ask what kind of spring did he have, which was a good one.
I was like, did I have a weird tone there when I said his name? I'll be careful the next time I bring up Zach Collins. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Hey,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Last player, I know you briefly mentioned him at the start of the interview, but I saw him throw some side sessions up close, and it was eye-opening stuff. Dylan Cease, to me, really impressive. What did you see from him this spring?
Boy, this kid has probably as high as upside as any pitcher in our system, and I include Kopech in that. Power stuff, great breaking ball, feel for the changeup, great composure on the mound, competitor. We're really, really happy with where Dylan's at right now. The thing with Dylan is that not actually too dissimilar from where Michael Kopech was a year ago. Dylan has yet to have that season that Michael had in 2017 where he takes the ball every fifth day and gets through a full starter's workload over the course of the season. You know, he had a little bit of an ankle injury last year that set him back for a period of time. He had some fatigue at the end of the year that set him back. Those are the kind of things we're looking to avoid with Dylan over the course of the 2018 season. Much as it was with Michael, we love this a year ago. We love the stuff. Take the ball every fifth day, handle that starter's workload, and the stuff's going to take care of the rest. And if he's able to do that, I think a year from now, people are going to be talking about him in the same way they're talking about Michael Kopech now.
I know you didn't go to the school, Rick, but are you on the Loyola train? All of Chicago's backing them right now. Have you had a chance to watch any of them?
I went to Michigan, so I still have a dog in
That's
the fight.
Right.
But I'm certainly happy for Loyola and for Chicago basketball. Yeah, I'm a little bit older, so I was kind of a DePaul guy growing up. Yeah. You know, I remember Aguirre and Cummings and Corbin Dillard, Grubbs, all those guys. So I was a DePaul guy more than a Loyola guy growing up, but it certainly is good for the city and obviously good for college basketball to have a Cinderella there right from our hometown.
Rick, I could talk to you an hour, but I know you're a busy man. You got things to do. I appreciate you jumping on for a few minutes here, and thanks a bunch, and I'm sure we'll touch base at some point this season.
Sounds good. I appreciate you having me, Kevin. Take care.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot. That's Rick Hahn, general manager of Chicago White Sox. Some really interesting stuff, and I really could talk to Rick for like an hour because he always gives you some good answers, always some in-depth stuff, and there's like a million questions you can or a million angles you can take with this White Sox club right now. It's exciting times. It's an ascending team, and it's a farm system that is loaded with an embarrassment of riches. So that's Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager. Appreciate him jumping on. And we'll take a quick timeout on Sports Central. Appreciate you tuning in, and we'll check in with Scott King, who covers the Chicago Blackhawks for WGN Radio. He does it well. The Blackhawks officially eliminated from the playoff race. Disappointing year. We'll talk to Scott King next on Sports Central.
WGN.
This is where WGN Sports Central lives.
It's alive!
Streaming right now with your host, Adam Hogue.
Adam Hogue is out. I'm Kevin Powell with you for another week or so. Thanks again to White Sox general manager Rick Hahn for jumping on. You'll be able to listen back to that at WGNradio.com and iTunes and Google Play and wherever you can find podcasts. We'll have this episode, Sports Central, up there so you can listen back if you missed Rick. Let's talk a little Blackhawks with Scott King. He covers the Hawks for WGN Radio at Scott King Media on Twitter. The Blackhawks officially eliminated from playoff contention after a 5-1 loss to the Avalanche. Nobody expected the Hawks to make it for a while now. It's been pretty much well known for the past couple months now that the Hawks weren't going to the playoffs. But last night made it official. Scott, what was the reaction to the team being eliminated from playoff contention? What was the reaction like in the locker room after the game?
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, I don't know if you guys need somebody to get you coffee or something in about 2 weeks. I'm going to have some free time here. the locker room. Yeah. Patrick Kane seems, I don't want to say completely deflated, but, you know, now these guys kind of do have to address it, that they're officially and mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. It's something that we knew was coming for about, at least a month or so, that they've had less than a 1% chance. So, you know, they're to their credit, they're not giving up on the season. They want to find their game. Patrick Kane's not a guy who has to find his game. Still got the 70 points already. Little luck if he gets hot. You could see him maybe finish the season with 80 points. But Jonathan Toews, who's been on the line with him, has certainly found his game. And he's been lighter on his skates, as I said last night, and he's been scoring a bunch. So you got his game where you want it. Seabrook scored a power play goal last night. Those core guys, you just want to see them find their game and get some confidence to build off of for next season.
First time in a decade they're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah, I went to the game last night because I'm like, all right, I'll catch a little hockey before baseball starts, and then I'm at the ballpark pretty much every day. I'm like, I'll go watch some hockey. I knew it didn't mean a whole lot, but you know, it was a weird feeling walking through the United Center because every game I'd been to for the past, I've been going to Hawks game for a while now, for 5-6 years. You know, we do shows from there. It just always feels like a big night at the United Center. It still felt big. It was still fun being there, but every game has always felt so important for the Blackhawks, and the UC didn't have that sort of buzz last night. I'm like, man, I haven't felt this in a long time. Like, this is like just going to a team who's just kind of in the middle and not really in contention for a championship. It was weird.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, when they were rolling and they were definitely in a playoff spot for the majority of the season, the UC would be buzzing like it's a playoff game. You know that, Kevin. Anytime you went there, you know, there's still fans there, still sold out, and people still get going for the anthem. But, there's not, if you're a fan, there's not too much to be excited about with this season. Obviously, for the players, you know, like I said, they're still trying to find their game and find confidence, so they are playing for something. But when you see a game like last night, and this has been the case, this has been their biggest issue, is holding leads. Since January 1st of this year, they've had 36 games, and 27 out of those 36 games, they scored the first goal. And after scoring the first goal, their record's 12-12-3. So they're just not holding leads, especially the second half. And some of that's the goaltending. A lot of that's defense. So, you know, it was good to see Seabrook get the first goal last night. I'm sure fans like that. But when you allow five unanswered goals after that, that's something that's not good, and that's something that's been their problem the last little while here and why they're not going to the playoffs.
Q addressed this before the game. The Avalanche last year had 48 points, just a miserable season. They're probably going to make the playoffs this year. That's how quickly things could change in the NHL. So I guess this is me trying to give Blackhawks fans hope that they may not make the playoffs this year, but it's you could turn it around. I wouldn't be shocked at all if they're back in the playoffs next year, would you?
For sure, and I wouldn't be surprised. I would say maybe I don't expect them just because guys' production was a lot lower this season, all the guys they need to produce. I see them improving next season. I see those guys finding their game again. I see the younger players developing, but I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs next season, but I would not be surprised if they do. And that said, yeah, the Avalanche are a good example of what can happen after your team struggles for one season, how you rebuild on the fly, how your guys find their game. And look at the Boston Bruins, too. They, you know, they could somehow get past Tampa in these playoffs. I expect Tampa to win the Stanley Cup this year, but the Bruins are a very dangerous team that you wouldn't want to face. So there's a couple teams to look at where, yeah, you have a bad season, but you rebuild a little bit. And look, the Hawks have a great chance of the draft coming up. They have two first-round picks, two third-round picks, and a fifth. So I think that you might see them move up in a draft and maybe be able to get a guy like Dahlin, a top defenseman. They're going to need a top defenseman to repair their defense.
All right. Well, you think Stan Bowman will be around to make those draft selections?
You know, I've learned not to predict these moves that can happen. You know, I've been surprised a lot, certainly the last couple of years, Kevin. I don't know who's going to. I don't know if Bowman or Quinville is going to be the odd man out. I would say, you know, if Quinville, maybe at least you give him a chance to see whatever kind of, even if it's a slight rebuild through, to get a chance to command that team. And Bowman, I don't know. I think you look at the signings he just made, signings like guys like Ruda and Gustafson, who he expects to find their game on defense. And also with that signing, that's kind of telling you that he does expect Keith and Seabrook to find their game again as well. So maybe give him a chance to see how those signings and the defense repairs itself next year before he's the odd man out.
All right, if you're running the Hawks, Scott, if you're John McDonough, what would you do? Would you bring back Stan and Q? Would you move on from both of them or one of them? What would you do?
I think you bring them both back at least a year. Now, after that, after let's say there's minimal to no improvement next season, what do you do then? And you have the big part is, yeah, I think what fans and the front office would like to see happen is to be able to move some of these guys like a Seabrook, like a Keith, that you can get a lot for. They're obviously losing a step and had some rough seasons here, but they have no trade clauses. So the same is the case with Taves, and he's not a guy that I would want to move at all for what he does still. But if you can't move a guy like that, I think that's who you want to see go is players like that that have a huge salary that aren't producing like they used to. But since he can't do that, maybe you do have to get rid of a Q or a Bowman, and I don't know if that's going to happen this year. I would give him one more year.
You know, I hear frustrated fans throwing out the idea that, okay, we need to trade Taves. He's not the player he once was, and he's getting paid all this money. And I'm like, okay, well, one, what are you going to get back for him? If he isn't this great player, then what kind of value are you even going to get in return? You'd be trading him basically for to get the numbers off the books, essentially. I know a lot of teams value him for a lot of other things, the leadership, etc. I can't see the Blackhawks trading Jonathan Taves. And I know you can't just keep a guy for past performance, reward a guy for past performance, but for what he's meant to this organization, the leader he is for the team, I just couldn't see it. Plus, and honestly, on paper, would it even make sense? Like, trading Taves for what? For a goalie if Crawford's not right next year? But what kind of goalie are you going to get for Taves if he's nearly on the wrong side of 30?
To trade him, yeah, I know he's had kind of three rough seasons. He's actually, like I said, he's been pretty hot this last little while playing with Kane and Brandon Saad. He's up to 52 points now, or in 20 goals. So that's not terrible. Do you want a lot more for a guy making $10 million a year? Yeah, of course. And that's, I think, is the reason why you won't see another team try to get him, because that's a lot of money for a guy who's just not producing the way he should. That said, like I said before, I think he will improve, continue to improve. But I just don't see him waiving his no-trade clause, and I don't see another team picking up the $10 million tab or giving enough guys in return to justify that trade. I just don't see it happening.
Right.
I think he stays.
So you've been around this team. You've seen it up close. What? I mean, the locker room, for the most part, has stayed together despite all the frustrations of this season. What is the vibe in that locker room?
I think it has. You don't see this on the bench either. People watching at TV or at the United Center, you don't see guys getting down on each other. You see, look, most of the team knows they're not performing the way they should. Everyone's underperforming the season across the board. You know, even Patrick Kane a little bit. So they're not getting down on each other, and they're getting down on themselves maybe in bunches because they know they need to produce more. I think it's just they're trying to shake whatever this is, and whether it's, you know, the old guys stepping up, the core, the leader stepping up, and giving the young guys a chance to develop in the NHL. Let's not forget how hard it is to play in the NHL if you're a guy who played in another country or a guy just out of college. It's very difficult. The speed and the skill is tremendous in the NHL, obviously. So, no, they're definitely not beating each other up. I'd say that, Kevin.
All right, assuming Stan Bowman is back, what should be on his to-do list this offseason?
Top two defensemen. Which, look, they have money for the first time in a long time. After some of these signings they're going to make after the season, guys currently on the roster, some extensions, maybe a guy like Anthony Duclair, I think they need a top two defenseman. They have money to do it finally. They're going to have about $12 million. You know, and I think Anton Forsberg, unfortunately, has kind of proven that he's not a reliable backup goaltender. I don't know if J.F. Berube is or not. So maybe you do need a backup, and you got to see how Crawford's doing. Like you said, you got to see how he's doing, because when he's playing and he's healthy, he's one of the best goalies in the NHL. He could have been the best goalie this year had he not suffered the upper body injury. So you got to see your goaltending situation. You at least need a backup, I think, but you definitely need a top two defenseman. I don't think you have such forward group. I like the group of forwards they have.
For Crawford, at this point, they haven't officially shut him down yet, have they? But is there even a point to bring him back? I know some people were suggesting that you just need to get him on the ice for at least a game or two, just so he has that in his mind going the offseason that, okay, he can play still. What do you think they should do there?
I think from Stan Bowman's perspective, you do want to see how he looks in net. We only have 8 games left, so I don't know. For me, I would say what's the purpose and why risk. We don't know exactly what it is with his injury, so I guess why risk it? But at the same time, you got to see if he can play. You got to see what you need for next season. So I still, Quinville, and he just might not be ready. They might not be playing it safe. He still might not be ready. It could be that bad, because Quinville does not sound optimistic about him returning anytime we talk to him, but he's definitely not ruling it out.
Andreas Martinsson, kind of an emergency call-up yesterday. What did you see from him? Anything, projecting long-term could be a benefit to the Hawks?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe he'll get another look soon on a non-emergency basis. I asked Quinville, actually, about him after the game, and you could tell Joel Quinville liked him. He likes guys that play that way. He had a big hit right away. I believe it was his first shift. It's funny, he's wearing number 29, kind of big guy, throwing his body around. I heard guys right in front of the press box going, is that Bickle? Is Bickle back? So,
well, he was so, huge. You know, I'm like, is that Martinsson? This guy's massive on the ice. He's a big body.
Yeah, I had not seen him in Rockford. I know he's going to be that big. And he had a couple of big hits, and then he was getting into it with guys in front of the net. Quinville said he brings some sandpaper to the Hawks game. So, yeah, I expect to see him back and certainly get a bigger look in training camp.
All right, Hawks play at home tomorrow. Then they have a game Saturday, and then they're back at the UC next Monday and next Thursday, and then that's it. And then Scott King, what do you go? Or I think their final game is April 6th, a Friday night game against St. Louis. Do you go into hibernation in the offseason now? This is weird. There's no playoffs. Normally the Hawks go deep, like even into the beginning of summer. So what does Scott King do now? Well, it's time
no
on
one's gonna, no one's going to see or hear from me.
Yeah, I think we're going to put you to work, Scott. I think you should sit on Sports Central with me and Hogue every now and again.
Yeah, look, I'm available. talk to my agent, which is also myself.
Yes,
just call me. I'm around.
What should people you got any blogs in the work? Anything that we should be looking for at WGNRadio.com?
Something on the loss last night, kind of an obituary, if you will, yeah. If you will, for their playoff chances last night, and talked about the game a little bit on the Chelsea blogger on WGNRadio.com. So there's that, and I will have a new podcast with Chris Bowden tomorrow, also on WGNRadio.com and on iTunes, and we'll have a game blog tomorrow, too.
All right. That's Scott King. Follow him on Twitter, at Scott King. Scott with two T's, at Scott King Media. Read his stuff at WGNRadio.com. Listen to his podcast. Scott, appreciate you jumping on, man.
Thanks, Gavin. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. That is Scott King, covers the Blackhawks. It was so weird. Like, I was walking to my seats last night, and normally, like, there's that excitement. You're getting that little buzz going. You're like, all right, this is going to be a big game. Madhouse is rocking. And just didn't quite feel that last night. It was a strange feeling. But fans are still dialed in. Blackhawks fans are some of the most, like, diehard fan bases out there. People love the Blackhawks. So, we'll see. Hopefully they can start a new postseason streak next season. But Blackhawks officially eliminated from playoff contention. Coming up next, we'll talk with Mark Carman, the Carm, about a wide variety of topics, including Loyola. We'll talk a little Bulls. Maybe I'll ask him about the Blackhawks. And Carman, one of our new White Sox postgame hosts at WGN and Radio. So we'll talk a little Sox with him as well. Mark Carman, coming up next on Sports Central.
Yeah, welcome to WGN!
Chicago's Sports Conversation. This is Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
This is Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell in for Adam Hogue. Appreciate you tuning in this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Thanks to Sox General Manager Rick Hahn for joining us. Scott King on the Blackhawks. And now we turn to the one and only at the Carm, Mark Carman. How you doing, Carm?
Bringing in all the big shooters in the area, KP.
That's right.
Minus myself.
Well, I wanted to talk to you because you have thoughts on just about everything in the sports world. And first of all, I haven't even had a chance to talk to you about the whole... You're the White Sox post-game host now. How awesome is that for you?
As you said that, I just removed a piece of my clothing and got very turned on by it. It's pretty amazing how I'm just, you know, super excited to have the team on the station and to be a part of it and all that. And we're obviously getting them at the perfect time. Not that there would ever be a bad time to get the White Sox, of course. But, you know, it's just super exciting what's to come. I know that you're geeked about it. And I heard, Kevin, are you actually moving to Guaranteed Rate Field? And they gave you a little bit of a loft situation that you're going to be hanging out with. I know the food is, you know, it's right there for you, plus the baseball. I think it's a perfect situation.
It would make sense. I'm going to be spending a lot of time there at 35th and Shield. So, yeah, if they can set up some sort of little cot, really right? Anywhere, maybe in a closet, just somewhere quiet where I can get some shut-eye. Maybe for all of us we could use that, considering how much time we're all going to be at the park this year.
You know, maybe we should go get a little co-op situation going on there. You could cook on Mondays.
I like that.
Who has Tuesdays, you know? I hear he's got a great egg bake situation going on.
Do you cook, Carman?
You know, Kevin, I just walked out of Chipotle.
Okay.
What's your order at Chipotle?
What's my order? Look, I'm not a huge Chipotle guy, believe it or not. I mean, I like it. I enjoy it. But see,
you're not a go-to Chipotle.
No, because you want to know why? When I go to Chipotle and I get a burrito, I'm like, you know what I just want right now? It's just like a greasy-ass burrito from some hole-in-the-wall place in Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to get a burrito, give me like an authentic Chicago Mexican burrito. It's
right.
Just Chipotle.
I would never...
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you. Like, that's why I never go burrito at Chipotle. I think it's a bad move. If you're going, the only order is the bowl. You might as well go bowl.
I normally go bowl. Okay. Do you get the guacamole? I think they charge like $7 extra for a little scoop of guac.
Too cheap for me to go guac. I don't like the investment return on a guac. The bowl stands up on its own. Don't need the guac. It's like a 1 out of 58 times I'll go guac just try one more time.
All right, let's talk a little White Sox, though, because that's fine. Yeah. Carman, look, I'll talk food with you for the next 20 minutes and fill this entire show with food talk, but I don't think other listeners would really enjoy that. Maybe sometime me and you will sit down on the show and we'll just talk food for like an hour. By the way, did you get the email from the White Sox? It's one of my favorite days of the year. The White Sox invite members of the media to check out the new amenities at the ballpark and also, more importantly, taste the new food that they're going to be offering up this year. Are you coming with us? Because I think Mr. Cat's coming. I think producer Dave's coming. I think Mazer might be coming. Are you in?
Yeah, it was a fascinating email response by Andy. It'll be a good chance to get a lay of the land. I probably do need. I feel like Andy knows every crevice of the ballpark already, so it's just like his way of darting around that he just wants to eat. 10:30 on a Tuesday is a tough time for me, Kevin Powell.
Why?
So I don't know.
Tennis match?
I'm on fansided.com. I'm working hard. I'm making videos. I'm talking. Big week over at the Fansided. I'm talking to an Andy Roddick and a David Robinson. So I don't know if I want to burn my time away for that particular adventure. I mean, I'm more like a take a day off opening day type of guy, you know, but yeah. I will miss you. I love the opportunity to go and eat some food. If I can make it work, maybe I'll just take an extended bathroom break. We'll figure it out.
All right, White Sox talk. Which player among their prospects gets you most excited?
That's a great question and a hard one to answer, but I guess I'm going to go with Luis Robert. I haven't seen him play in person, but everything you read about Luis Robert, number one, great guy. Number two, can play all three outfield spots. Number three, you got the speed power combo at the plate. I think that guy, it's not being talked about, it's not going to happen, but. And he's out for 2 months, so it hurts. But before that happened, I'm like, you know what? If the White Sox surprise this year, which I know that's not a huge odd, but if they do, I was like, this guy, the way everyone's talking, who knows how quick he's going to come? Because there hasn't been a bad word said about him. But they're all, you know, I can't wait to see Mike Pope back out there. I mean, even though that might not be for a while. And you know, I mean, Aloy, I mean, come on, right? And right now to me, look at the screen, look at Giolito's head and
Carmen, hang on, your phone's like cutting in and out. Are you walking around with your phone?
Oh no. How's now?
Still pretty awful.
Let's go with a walk around.
There you go, right there. That's the sweet spot right there. Yes, right there.
Right here? Okay, I'll hang in the sun. My bad. Okay.
That's fine. A ton of prospects. It's just like and being like up close with some of those guys being out at Camelback, it's just they're all huge athletes. It's like one guy after another, so obviously an embarrassment of riches in the farm system. Let's talk about the Cubs for a second, Carmen. Not a whole lot of question marks out of Cubs camp, really. It's basically like, who's going to bat leadoff? How's Tyler Chatwood going to do as the fifth starter? And how's the bullpen going to shake out? For you, what's the biggest question mark for the Cubs going into the season?
I still stress the leadoff spot and center field. So what you're going to lead Ian Happ off, and he's going to play center field and do a good job out there? Not a center fielder, not a leadoff guy. Okay, that goes south. You're going to go with Albert Almora, good center fielder, hasn't hit worth a lick in the spring. I know it's the spring, can't overreact, but he's, you know, leadoff guy is not his thing. He'd be way better down in the order.
You don't think Ian Happ can play center field regularly?
I mean, I think he's okay. I think he can play it in Wrigley. I haven't seen him this spring, so if he's made some major moves, but last year it was like, yeah, I'm going to take two steps left, I'm going to take two steps right, and oh my God, maybe I'll catch it, and it's a miracle. Okay, it'll land in his glove. He certainly was. I wouldn't, as far as center fielders go, I would lower third, maybe lower quarter. So I'm not saying he can't do it, but you also, you know, you factor in, you got Kyle Schwarber playing a whole lot of left field. So now you got a bad left fielder and you got a bad center fielder. And the other thing that's not being talked about with the Cubs, like, Wade Davis was unbelievable last year. Yeah. Brandon Morrow's really going to step in and be 85% of Wade Davis? I'm not so sure about that. He's never really closed in his life, certainly not in the opportunity of this. I would you know, it doesn't look like the Cubs are going to go get Greg Holland or you know, add on to the bullpen right now. Apparently, they're sitting on about $8 million of flexibility. So I think there's concerns with the closer situation and also who's going to be playing center field and leading off.
Carmen, I don't know if you saw this, but Forbes came out with a ranking of all 30 major league ballparks. Did you see the list of this?
Oh, I saw it.
Okay, so Wrigley comes in at 10th. Your thoughts? Wow.
I think that Forbes should stop being a magazine.
No.
You're putting Wrigley Field behind Kauffman Stadium. I don't know if you know this, Kevin. I worked in Kansas City, did some great radio at 610 Sports Radio. I've spent a lot of time at Kauffman Stadium. On its best day, it's a half of Wrigley Field. And I like Kauffman Stadium, but come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Food's atrocious. It's a concrete block of nothing. Yeah, okay, they got a sweet video board and there's the fountain, but it's straight out of the Vet and old Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. I mean, come on. So that list was, I mean, that was by a contributor, and he was taking a spin at it. And then you're really going to put Guaranteed Rate Field 28?
Yeah, that's outrageous.
It's the best ballpark. I mean, come on, man. But that being said, like, you go through it, baseball is just like every stadium is great. Like, they're all awesome. So
yeah.
the only two bad fields are the Trop in Tampa and
the Coliseum
in Oakland. I mean, those are, yeah, I mean, that's really it. You could throw every, you know.
Yeah.
What's better, Citizens Bank or Guarantee Rate? I guess, I mean, it's to each his own. But I've always thought that Sox Park gets a raw deal.
Totally does. AT&T Park ranked number one. Then it's Camden Yards. Busch Stadium third was a shocker to me. I've been to Busch a handful of times now, and it's underwhelming.
Right. I mean, where does that come from?
I don't know.
A brand new, generally cookie cutter ballpark is number three. What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, Dodger Stadium four.
Fenway
then
one, Wrigley two, Wrigley one, Fenway two. I mean, that's all I would.
Yeah.
Fenway, you want to say Fenway's one, I wouldn't.
Fenway coming in seventh, Kauffman eighth, Coors Field sixth, bouncing around here. It was interesting list here. Before I let you go, Carmen, I know you're a hoops dude. Are you on the Loyola train all the way or what?
I mean, how can you not, right?
Yeah.
Sister Jean, I'm trying to get her to invite me over for dinner after the whole thing. I figured I'd bring over, something that maybe a bottle of wine, we can go back through this whole all this incredible run. But I mean, I've always been a fan of Porter Moser since he started, you know, when he got there, and having him on the radio show and just the energy and the enthusiasm, like, this guy's gonna do something. And we'll see if he lasts at Loyola after this year. I think a lot of people are gonna want Porter Moser to be their basketball coach. But I mean, they just play the right way. The Dante Ingram Chicago thing is great. Clayton Custer, I mean, have you ever seen a more fundamental basketball player at the point? Every time he catches the ball, falls in triple threat position. What am I going to do? I'm going to pass it. I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to dribble it. I'm Clayton Custer. You know, I mean, they're just, if the guy ever traveled in his life, every time, you know, perfect jump stop. So and they got a great chance. Nevada's good, though. So, I mean, they got the Twins that once played at North Carolina State. They were Wolfpack there, and now they're Nevada Wolfpack. You got to enjoy that little. Isn't that kind of fun? I find that to be interesting.
That's pretty
so we'll
fun.
See. Yeah, I love it, man. I absolutely love it, hopefully they can keep pushing, because you couldn't have a better matchup as far as playing a 17 in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. All right. He's Mark Carmen at the Carm. You can hear him regularly on WGN Radio. The Beat 4-7 on Saturdays. He and Harry Tynowitz. Carmen also does work at Fansided, which I don't go to enough. I mean, I'm just going to be completely honest. I don't go to Fansided.com enough, Mark Carmen. Tell me why. Tell the people why they should go to Fansided. Like, you can do your elevator pitch for your website.
Well, you just get more of me, Kev. Let's just talk
okay.
about
I'm
just,
sold. I'm in.
Isn't
yeah,
that all you
yeah
really?
There you go. But, yeah, yes. But, no, there's it's the fan point of view. You got contributors talking, so they're not beholden to the teams. You get a more of a raw take. And a lot of I got to tell you, the video department, they keep on raising the bar there. More and more technology coming in, so it's pretty cool what we're doing on the video side.
So I started a baseball podcast, Carm, Powell at the Park podcast,
yeah,
which rolls right off the top.
Congrats.
Yeah, and I texted you, and you said, yeah, I'll come on anytime. About 2 hours later, I said, hey, can you come on this week? And you said, sorry, can't do it this week. So we're going to have to figure that out,
yeah,
Carmen. If you said any time, and then you've denied me like twice already, I feel a little slighted by the Carm.
hold on a second here, Kevin. There was only one denial, and that was for last week, and it was a late in the week. It was a late in the week ask if we can go back through the text chain, and it was a busy week. I said next week. We're here on Wednesday. Apologize that an ambulance is running by. This is Chicago. I don't know if you can hear that. So I probably did oversell and under deliver. You're correct on the anytime. And I should have just texted back. Would love to do it when I have the time. Would have been a more accurate thing. And congratulations. So I apologize. But, you know, the spirit, Kevin, is that I would love to do it anytime.
Right. No, I got you. I got you, Carm. I really wanted to get the whole broadcast team in, like you, Andy, and Carm, but I don't know. That seems next to impossible considering all of our schedules. But I got to have you. Maybe you could sit in for a full episode. How does that sound, Carm? That would be fun, right?
I think that sounds great. I like it after the Rokon show, a nice 7 o'clock, or let's sit down, have a, you know, maybe I'll bring in some cuisine. We can all
maybe
a little Shake Shack combo. You get a double, have a shake, and let's do it.
Beautiful. You're the best. Mark Carman at the Carm on Twitter, fansided.com. He has a show here at WGN on Saturdays. Appreciate it, Carman. Thanks for hopping on.
JP, thanks for having me, brother.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. That is the great, the one and only Mark Carman. Always like talking to the car. A wide variety of topics. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll come back with buried headlines. Lots of crazy buried headlines for you right here on Sports Central next. Buried headlines on Sports Central. This is when we just kind of talk about any little news tidbit or any story we thought maybe didn't get enough attention. We do this every day. I think this story did get attention, but the XFL made some news earlier in the year that it's coming back. Vince McMahon relaunching the XFL, which lasted just one season in 1999. McMahon's bringing it back in 2020. And then all of a sudden yesterday, and I hadn't even seen anything about this, the XFL stuff was kind of rumored for a couple weeks, and then McMahon had a huge announcement for it. There's another football league that's launching next year. In less than a year, we're going to have a whole new football league, 10 teams, 50-man rosters. It's called the Alliance of American Football. It'll debut February 9, 2019 on CBS. I think that's the biggest part of this is, like, they have a broadcast partner. Charlie Ebersol, the son of NBC exec Dick Ebersol, announced a press release that the Alliance of American Football will debut on February 9th, 2019 on CBS. Now, Charlie Ebersol was the one who directed ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary on the XFL, which is kind of interesting that he documented a failed football league and then he spearheaded the start of a new football league. Anyways, he's partnered with former NFL general manager Bill Polian, who you see do analyst work on ESPN. He'll oversee the league. That's the way they're describing it, which sounds like he'll be kind of the commissioner of the league. Former Steeler safety Troy Polamalu will oversee the player side. Former USC standout and executive J.K. McKay will oversee the team side. Hey, I guess the league's going to own every team. Some other advisors that'll be involved. Dick Ebersol will be kind of involved as in an advisory role. Hines Ward, receiver Hines Ward, and defense lineman Justin Tuck also will be have a hand in it as advisors. Here's my thing, though. It's like, how are you going to get... You basically need 500 players. If it's a 10-man league with 50-man rosters, you need 500 players. How are they going to get all these... How are they going to get 500 players by next February? I mean, I guess there's players who are, like, craving to play still and maybe miss their shot at the pros or trying to make a name for themselves, but damn, that's a lot of football players they need.
It's possible, Kevin.
Ben, are you in?
I'm in.
You going to throw your hat in the ring?
I say that's, like, setting himself up for success, because if it does fail, he's got another 30 for 30 ready to go.
I didn't even think of it that way.
But no, you know what? There's enough players out there. What, Chicago has at least three, you know, minor league football leagues out here?
Really?
Yeah, the talent's out there.
Damn, I'm in. I miss playing football. I'll risk some CTE to throw the pads on one more time. So the Alliance of American, let me make sure I have this right here. The Alliance of American Football, February 9th, 2019. I'm excited because right after the Super Bowl, I go into this depression. I'm like, damn it, football's over. This sucks. Everything sucks. So even if this football is really bad, I'm going to watch. Not going to lie. Not every game is going to be on CBS, by the way. They're going to have a website that's going to stream majority of the games. But CBS, I guess, will broadcast the first game, and it will broadcast the championships. I think it's going to actually on network TV. You're going to watch the Alliance of American Football. Crazy times. All right. Thank you to White Sox General Manager Rick Connie. Join us at the top of the show. We then talked to Scott King, who covers the Blackhawks for WGN Radio. And Hawks officially eliminated from playoff contention. First time in a decade they're going to miss the postseason. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. And then Mark Carmen joined us with a horrible phone connection, but we appreciate him jumping on. He talked about a wide range of things. Talked a little Sox with him. Talked to Loyola. Fun show. Thanks to Ben Anderson behind the glass. He's the producer of Sports Central. Kevin Powell in for Adam Hogan. I'll be back tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to talk with Steve Greenberg, Chicago Sun-Times. He's down in Atlanta covering the Loyola Ramblers. They play tomorrow night, so we'll do a preview with Steve. And then who else do we have tomorrow? We have somebody else booked.
I don't know. I don't think you've...
Devontae Harris.
Oh.
That'll... Fear the Bird. Illinois State Redbird defensive back. He ran a sub-4.440. He's going to join us. He has NFL aspirations. And if he doesn't make the NFL, he can go to the new Alliance of American Football. But we're going to talk to him at 1:30. We'll talk to Steve Greenberg off the top of the show. Thanks again for listening. I'm Kevin Powell. This is Sports Central. We'll be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Have a good day.